Chapter 33. All dark objects on the earth that lay towards the sun were overspread by a purple haze, against which groups of wailing gnats shone out, rising upwards and dancing about like sparks of fire.
"Oh, this leaving you is too hard to bear," exclaimed Eustacia in a sudden whisper of anguish.
"Your mother will influence you too much. I shall not be judged fairly. It will get afloat that I am not a good girl, and the witch story will be added to make me blacker.
They cannot. Nobody dares to speak disrespectfully of you or of me.
Oh, how I wish I was sure of never losing you, that you could not be able to desert me anyhow."
Klim stood silent a moment. His feelings were high, the moment was passionate, and he cut the knot.
"You shall be sure of me, darling," he said, folding her in his arms.
"He will be married at once.
Oh, Klim, do you agree to it?"
If we can.
We certainly can, both being of full age. And I have not followed my occupation all these years without having accumulated money. And if you will agree to live in a tiny cottage somewhere on the heath, until I take a house in Budmouth for the school, we can do it at a very little expense."
"How long shall we have to live in the tiny cottage, Klim?"
"About 6 months. At the end of that time I shall have finished my reading."
"Yes, we will do it, and this heartaching will be over.
We shall, of course, live in absolute seclusion, and our married life will only begin to outward view when we take the house in Budmouth, where I have already addressed a letter on the matter.
Would your grandfather allow you?"
"I think he would, on the understanding that it should not last longer than 6 months.
I will guarantee that, if no misfortune happens."
"If no misfortune happens," she repeated slowly,
"which is not likely.
Dearest, fix the exact day."
And then they consulted on the question, and the day was chosen. It was to be a fortnight from that time.
This was the end of their talk, and Eustacia left him.
Klim watched her as she retired towards the sun. The luminous rays wrapped her up with her increasing distance, and the rustle of her dress over the sprouting sedge and grass died away. As he watched, the dead flat of the scenery overpowered him, though he was fully alive to the beauty of that untarnished early summer green which was worn for the nonce by the poorest blade. There was something in its oppressive horizontality which too much reminded him of the arena of life. It gave him a sense of bare equality with, and no superiority to, a single living thing under the sun. Eustacia was now no longer the goddess, but the woman to him, a being to fight for, support, help, be maligned for. Now that he had reached a cooler moment, he would have preferred a less hasty marriage. But the card was laid, and he determined to abide by the game. Whether Eustacia was to add one other to the list of those who love too oddly, to love long and well, the forthcoming event was certainly a ready way of proving. 6 Eobright goes, and the breach is complete. All that evening smart sounds denoting an act of packing up came from Eobright's room to the ears of his mother downstairs. Next morning he departed from the house, and again proceeded across the heath. A long day's march was before him, his object being to secure a dwelling to which he might take Eustacia when she became his wife. Such a house, small, secluded, and with its windows boarded up, he had casually observed a month earlier, about 2 miles beyond the village of East Egdon, and 6 miles distant altogether, and thither he directed his steps today. The weather was far different from that of the evening before. The yellow and vapoury sunset which had wrapped up Eustacia from his parting gaze had presaged change. It was one of those not infrequent days of an English June which are as wet and boisterous as November. The cold clouds hastened on in a body, as if painted on a moving slide. Vapors from other continents arrived upon the wind, which curled and parted round him as he walked on. At length Klim reached the margin of a fir and beech plantation that had been enclosed from heathland in the year of his birth. Here the trees, laden heavily with their new and humid leaves, were now suffering more damage than during the highest winds of winter, when the boughs are especially disencumbered to do battle with the storm. The wet young beeches were undergoing amputations, bruises, cripplings, and harsh lacerations, from which the wasting sap would bleed for many a day to come, and which would leave scars visible till the day of their burning. Each stem was wrenched at the root, where it moved like a bone in its socket, and at every onset of the gale convulsive sounds came from the branches, as if pain were felt. In a neighboring brake a finch was trying to sing, but the wind blew under his feathers till they stood on end, twisted round his little tail, and made him give up his song. Yet a few yards to the upright's left, on the open heath, how ineffectively gnashed the storm. Those gusts which tore the trees merely waved the firs and heather in the light caress. Egdon was made for such times as these. Eobright reached the empty house about midday. It was almost as lonely as that of Eustacia's grandfather, but the fact that it stood near a heath was disguised by a belt of firs which almost enclosed the premises. He journeyed on about a mile further to the village in which the owner lived, and, returning with him to the house, arrangements were completed, and the man undertook that one room at least should be ready for occupation the next day. Clem's intention was to live there alone until Eustacia should join him on their wedding day. Then he turned to pursue his way homeward through the drizzle that had so greatly transformed the scene. The ferns, among which he had lain in comfort yesterday, were dripping moisture from every frond, wetting his legs through as he brushed past, and the fur of the rabbits leaping before him was clotted in two dark locks by the same watery surrounding. He reached home damp and weary enough after his 10-mile walk. It had hardly been a propitious beginning, but he had chosen his course, and would show no swerving. The evening and the following morning were spent in concluding arrangements for his departure. To stay at home a minute longer than necessary after having once come to his determination would be, he felt, only to give new pain to his mother by some word, look, or deed. He had hired a conveyance and sent off his goods by 2 o'clock that day. The next step was to get some furniture, which, after serving for temporary use in the cottage, would be available for the house at Budmouth, when increased by goods of a better description. A mart extensive enough for the purpose existed at Anglebury, some miles beyond the spot chosen for his residence, and there he resolved to pass the coming night. It now only remained to wish his mother goodbye. She was sitting by the window as usual when he came downstairs. "Mother, I am going to leave you," he said, holding out his hand. "I thought you were, by your packing," replied Mrs. Eobright in a voice from which every particle of emotion was painfully excluded. "And you will part friends with me?"
"Certainly, Clem.
I am going to be married on the 25th.
"I thought you were going to be married.
And then you must come and see us. You will understand me better after that, and our situation will not be so wretched as it is now. I do not think it likely I shall come to see you.
Then it will not be my fault or Eustacia's, Mother. Goodbye."
He kissed her cheek, and departed in great misery, which was several hours in lessening itself to a controllable level. The position had been such that nothing more could be said without, in the first place, breaking down a barrier, and that was not to be done. No sooner had Eobright gone from his mother's house than her face changed its rigid aspect for one of blank despair. After a while she wept, and her tears brought some relief. During the rest of the day she did nothing but walk up and down the garden path in a state bordering on stupefaction. Night came, and with it but little rest. The next day, with an instinct to do something which should reduce prostration to mournfulness, she went to her son's room, and with her own hands arranged it in order, for an imaginary time, when he should return again. She gave some attention to her flowers, but it was perfunctorily bestowed, for they no longer charmed her. It was a great relief when, early in the afternoon, Thomason paid her an unexpected visit. This was not the first meeting between the relatives since Thomason's marriage, and past blunders having been in a rough way rectified, they could always greet each other with pleasure and ease. The oblique band of sunlight which followed her through the door became the young wife well. It illuminated her as her presence illuminated the heath. In her movements, in her gaze, she reminded the beholder of the feathered creatures who lived around her home. All similes and allegories concerning her began and ended with birds. There was as much variety in her motions as in their flight. When she was musing, she was a kestrel, which hangs in the air by an invisible motion of its wings. When she was in a high wind, her light body was blown against trees and banks like a heron's. When she was frightened, she darted noiselessly like a kingfisher. When she was serene, she skimmed like a swallow, and that is how she was moving now. "You are looking very blithe, upon my word, Tamsy," said Mrs. Eobright, with a sad smile. "How is Damon?" "He is very well." "Is he kind to you, Thomason?" And Mrs. Eobright observed her narrowly. "Pretty fairly." "Is that honestly said?" "Yes, aunt. I would tell you, if he were unkind," she added, blushing, and with hesitation. "I don't know if I ought to complain to you about this, but I am not quite sure what to do. I want some money, you know, and some to buy little things for myself, and he doesn't give me any. I don't like to ask him, and yet, perhaps, he doesn't give it me, because he doesn't know. Ought I to mention it to him, aunt?" "Of course you ought. Have you never said a word on the matter?" "You see, I had some of my own," said Thomason evasively, "and I have not wanted any of his until lately. I did just say something about it last week, but he seems not to remember." "He must be made to remember. You are aware that I have a little box full of spade guineas, which your uncle put into my hands, to divide between yourself and Clem whenever I chose. Perhaps the time has come when it should be done. They can be turned into sovereigns at any moment. I think I should like to have my share, that is, if you don't mind." "You shall, if necessary. But it is only proper that you should first tell your husband distinctly that you are without any, and see what he will do." "Very well, I will. Aunt, I have heard about Clem. I know you are in trouble about him, and that's why I have come." Mrs. Eobright turned away, and her features worked in her attempt to conceal her feelings. Then she ceased to make any attempt, and said, weeping, "Oh, Thomason, do you think he hates me? How can he bear to grieve me so, when I have lived only for him through all these years?" "Hate you, no," said Thomason soothingly. "He is only that he loves her too well. Look at it quietly, do. It is not so very bad of him. Do you know, I thought it not the worst match he could have made. Miss Vi's family is a good one on her mother's side, and her father was a romantic wanderer, a sort of Greek Ulysses." "It is no use, Thomason. It is no use. Your intention is good, but I will not trouble you to argue. I have gone through the whole that can be said on either side times, and many times. Clem and I have not parted in anger, we have parted in a worse way. It is not a passionate quarrel that would have broken my heart. It is the steady opposition and persistence in going wrong that he has shown. Oh, Thomason, he was so good as a little boy, so tender and kind." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.